Carmen and Yurko
on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
If you miss something, the podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now. Get it in the App Store and Google Play.
Ladies and gentlemen. Hope everyone's having a nice Friday so far. Chilly this morning, but it's shaping up to be a nice autumnal day. Did you take your fig tree in last night?
Oh, yes.
Good. Yeah.
And the bamboo tree.
Yeah. And a bamboo tree.
Yeah, I got a nice bamboo tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got chilly.
Carmen, you can't water that bamboo too much.
No, got to be careful.
It lives in water usually.
Aha!
Remember that.
You're some, I don't know if you call you a horticulturist or what.
I don't know what direction you're going here, dude.
But he's divorced. Give him a break.
Yeah, Carmen. You know? Come on. Don't be judging me too harshly.
You really are like a jack of all trades, man.
I'm trying to figure it out. I got some tulips. I want some nice tulips coming up. So you got to plant those before the ground freezes.
Planting fig trees.
But I got to get rid of. I got some thorny plants up front that I'm not disappointed with. I got some ferns that have gone a little bit crazy. They expand too much. I'm trying to find like the one area that's the kingpin of it, and pull that like little nub that it has. If I can get rid of that, I think I get rid of them all.
I mean, you're a renaissance man, my friend.
I love tulips, man.
I like the tulips, too. The problem is the tulips come up for like 3 weeks.
And they're gone.
And then they're gone. Barely that. It's like, really?
Never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again until next year.
I'll wait till next April to come see you again.
Yeah, see you in April. They are pretty when they come up, though.
Oh, kid, I had buddies out mushroom hunting the last couple of weeks.
Now, that'll tell you.
End of the woods. End of the woods. I don't know if you've seen the size of these
delicious
things, man, but my
black
heavens.
Trumpet mushrooms and hen of the woods.
Yeah.
Just make sure that they're not bad mushrooms.
Yeah, they're not poison.
You want that kind. Hey, look, it's a top five caller himself. This is Harding's like Yurko. He just gives himself sobriquets and rankings. He's like, yeah, I'm top five caller Harding. Harding's on ESPN 1000. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's really hard listening to you talk about Coach Shaheen like that. Hey, so I'm looking at the psychology behind the smartest man in the room and the offensive genius, and it boils down to me, egotistical lack of accountability. When you talk about a franchise that's passing on Cam Newton, may not have shown as much interest in Le'Veon Bell, it looks like they are intentionally avoiding nationally recognized names. And the only reason somebody of that nature would do that is because they want their system to generate household names. So I think, in my personal opinion, the egos of two gentlemen are getting in the way of the productivity of the offense because they don't want to improve it from an external standpoint. They just want this system to begin to make players look really, really good. That's my opinion on what's going on with the Bears offensively, because defensively we keep talking, you know, bad about them, whatever the case is, but you're going to give them some statistics pretty soon that would tell a different story. So
yes.
I'll let you guys discuss that, but
thanks, Harding.
I love talking to you. Top five.
You're the man, Harding. Thank you very much. I think most coaches and GMs do kind of, you know, they know they've been around that these jobs, it's such a transient lifestyle they live, and they work with so many different people. And then when they do get the head job, like, they kind of know who they like, personnel they like, front office personnel, player personnel. I mean, Ryan Pace likes who he likes, you know. For whatever reason, he thought he saw Drew Brees and Mitch Trubisky. Big mistake. Jimmy Graham he likes. He was in New Orleans when Jimmy Graham was there. Now, Jimmy's been good for them in the red zone. In all fairness, he has been. But, like, Ryan Pace couldn't wait to go out and bid against nobody and give Jimmy Graham $9 million guaranteed because that's who he likes. Matt went out and said, I need Nick Foles. I mean, I don't think that's too dissimilar from most coaches. Do they have some sort of, like,
But most of the time, Carmen, it's guys that you've been associated with that you fall in love with.
No, I know.
Guys that you trust.
Yeah.
Like, that you bring on board, but you know you can get a decent deal with those guys.
So to Harding's point, like, is there something egotistical that is driving their decision to not go after someone like Le'Veon Bell because he's not one of their guys? I don't think so. That'd be silly.
There's a lot of ego in them coaching rooms, though. So, yeah, there's some ego to it. Yes.
Here, I'll play another Lewis Riddick real quick, and then we'll get back out to the phones. Because this is something that's been discussed now for the last couple weeks. Dan Wiederer brought this up 2 weeks ago, I think, on one of the shows. I think he was doing Waddle and Sylvie. Lewis Riddick kind of hinted at it a little bit yesterday. Does Matt Nagy get too cute when he's calling plays?
Sometimes play callers want to use everything that's on their sheet.
because it's big, it's colorful, and they put a lot of time into it, so they want to call everything on it. Instead of, and they'll admit this too, instead of staying just true to what your team can do best, instead of what you think is your best call based on how much time you put in the film room and all the work that you've done. And you want to see that pay off for yourself. Just stay true to who your team is. And yeah, that happens to all of them. And I'm sure, and there's times where you can see that you go, is that really the best play call for this situation? Is that really about what their players can do best? Or is that about how smart he thinks he is? And I'm not saying just Matt, I'm saying any coach. So yeah, that happens. The best ones over time know when they can't do that and still just make it about the players. Just call the best play for this situation based off of what my guys showed me all week long that they can do best, or what they're telling me in this moment. Hey, coach, call this. We know we can hit on this. We don't know if we can hit on all this other cute stuff maybe you got, but we know we can do this. It's a give and take. And it's something that, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something that's going to ultimately determine whether or not this good start that they've had is something they can sustain. They have to stay true to who they are, because they don't have all the bells and whistles that some of the other teams have offensively that can allow you to be cute as a play caller. They've got to almost be vanilla and be basic and say, hey, look, these are the routes that Nick throws the best. These are the routes that Allen likes the best. This is how we can pop Anthony Miller down the seam now and then. This is how we can get Darnell Mooney, involved. This is how we can have maybe get David to pop a run here and there on a draw or an outside zone or a screen or something like that.
I thought that was good stuff from Lewis Riddick, a good kind of breakdown of what the weaknesses are. Sometimes maybe it's more, maybe it happens more often with young play callers like Matt Nagy, that he's still trying to learn that. And I think that was the genesis of the, not feud, but the slight back and forth that he and Nick Foles were having in the Thursday night game last week against Tampa, when Nick was saying, you got to trust me here. We're going up tempo. Let's keep it going. You don't have to call every single play that you wrote down on your play card this week. It doesn't have to work that way.
You've got to be able to put your feelings aside. You've got to be able to be honest with each other. It's quarterback and coach. And then not be insulted by what's being said. Because some of the things that might be going back and forth could theoretically be insulting. You've got to be able to take what's being said and listen to that. And the way it's being said, you got to throw in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always constructive criticism going back and forth. But if there's any sensitivity there, then it could become a problem at some point.
You got to leave that at the door.
Sensitivity's
kid.
At the door.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you sit on the bench, you get screamed at, you get yelled at. Find out what he's trying to tell you. And don't worry about how he's doing it. Because down the line, he'll come back and say, hey, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I didn't mean to get on you, get after you, the heat of the moment. Of course, there's always the heat of the moment. There's craziness happening all the time.
I know, yeah.
But and, I've seen coaches fall in love.
Lewis Riddick said that sometimes these play callers have to learn to just listen to what their players are telling them. And I think that's what Nick Foles was trying to reiterate. That might be one of Nick Foles' greatest strengths, believe it or not, is understanding the flow of the game, of understanding the situation, of knowing what's a good play call and what's not. The check he made to get the third down conversion to keep the chains moving and get them into field goal position on the throw to David Montgomery. Let's remember, it was Nick Foles who went to the sideline in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago and said to Doug Peterson, hey, it's time for Philly special.
Yeah.
Wasn't Doug Peterson that called that. Doug
right.
Peterson looked at him and said, yeah, okay, let's do it.
Let's do
that
it.
Was Nick Foles that
That's
went
right.
to the sideline and said, what do you think, coach?
He had the feel.
Philly special.
He had the feel for
That's it.
It. Yep.
I mean, like, that might be Nick's greatest strength. Let's see, we got a lot of Bears calls. How about here's Tony's a diehard Chiefs fan. He wants to talk about Nagy's 5 weeks in KC back in 17. Tony in Yorkville. What's up, Tone?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Just wanted to call again, just tell you guys thank you for not drafting Mahomes number 10 again.
Oh, very, very, yes. You're
appreciate
welcome,
it,
Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Rub it in.
But no, I love the Bears, though. They're my NFC team if I'm not rooting for the Chiefs. That's what frustrates me about Nagy, because I didn't like it from the beginning just due to the fact that those 5 weeks were the most overblown and kind of mythological, if that is even a word thing. I mean, God bless Andy Reid for, getting his guys into a best position to get a job, but he may have physically been calling the plays, relaying it to Alex, but it's Andy's the one that's coming up with the play for him to call to Alex, and I think that's the biggest problem. He doesn't, like you said, the flow. When Nick was going up tempo, he's like, hold on, let me call a play, and then what happened? Sack, fumble, or just a sack? Something like that.
Sack.
He doesn't
that was a sack.
Know how to do any kind of in-game adjustments, or if his game plan that he prepared for that week isn't going, it's all right. You know, everybody kind of go deep. You know, it's not Madden. You can't have these guys drop back 7-10 steps when the tackles are getting blown up all the time. I mean, it's just it's frustrating to watch because, like you guys said, he's almost like Tibbs, right? When you walk it, he wants you to walk it up the court.
Oh, it's
brutal. Let me get a play in. You run the play. This is how we're going to win. And I think, you know, Pace, Nagy, and Mitch are, you know, they kind of came in together, and they're going to leave together. I mean, God bless Mitch. Should not have been drafted number two. God bless Nagy. Pace wanted to find the, you know, the Kyle Shanahans of the world. Problem was, Kyle was already calling plays before, and Nagy just didn't have the experience. And like you said, Pace, drafting out of need is always going to get you killed. I don't care how many diamonds in the roughs you find later on in the round. You swing and miss in rounds one and two, which he's done on a consistent basis. You just it's setting them all back.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say. Love you guys.
Thanks,
Love
Tony. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Maybe Nagy just doesn't have the feeling. Maybe he'll get it. That's what I'm hopeful for. You know that at some point he will kind of figure it out. Patrick's on the south side. What's up, Patrick?
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, kind of to somewhat piggyback off this last caller here. You know, Andy Reid is heralded as arguably the best play caller in the NFL in today's day and age. If he's so free and willing to allow the likes of Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy to go ahead and call plays for his team to the point where he would actually allow to, I don't know if he allowed it, but end up losing a playoff game like what Nagy did to him, why is it so difficult for somebody who's not even in the same stratosphere as Andy Reid and Matt Nagy to not allow someone else to just switch it up and call a play, you know, throughout the game or whatever, just for a game, just to see how it goes? I'm just kind of curious. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Patrick. My guess is that, again, with the younger coaches, it's a little bit harder because he's trying to prove that the Bears made the right choice in him, and that's why they chose him, because of his ability to call plays, to be the offensive mind that they need to get them going forward. It's easier for Jason Garrett or Mike McCarthy or Andy Reid, who have all at some point in their play calling, in their head coaching careers, relinquished play calling duties. You know what is sort of interesting, though? Those coaches usually don't relinquish them too long. They all take them back.
Always.
Eventually they take them back. You know what I mean?
They get a feeling that it's not right.
I just think the circumstances are different.
I would just hope he's communicating with his coaches and they're getting their input on the phones. Hey, maybe this is something we should try.
Bill Lazor's standing there right next to him on the sideline.
I don't think he's against taking advice.
Yeah.
And he may be getting some advice.
I mean, Bill Lazor's not upstairs, right? Bill Lazor's been on the sideline with him, hasn't he? I'm almost positive.
You're probably right. I don't know.
Bill Lazor's not in the box. He's right there on the sideline. They should be communicating.
Jericho, did Mike Holmgren ever relinquish play calling?
No, Sherm Lewis never called one play. It was Mike Holmgren calling plays the whole time.
What about when he went to Seattle, York? Did he? I don't think he ever did.
I don't think he ever did. Maybe Andy Reid at some point may have called plays before 99. Maybe he would have given him a game or a couple of plays, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe he'd let him do the first 15. But we'd have to ask Andy. Or Mike.
The thing is, like all those guys, like the guys who are really good, they establish their success as offensive play callers generally for a good stretch of time. We're talking like 5 to 10 years as a head coach on the sidelines where you know they're a genius.
Yeah. And then they can give it up
and
for
then
a
like,
while.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, Carm, then they have the trick in their back pocket. If things go poorly, they say, give me the card.
That's it. So it's a different circumstance, I think, with a young Matt Nagy right now. 312-332-3776. Is the number if you want to jump in. Lines are packed with Bears fans getting ready for week 6 here as they go to Carolina. And speaking of that game, Yurko's got his smoking hot keys to the game next.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Todd Furman live in Vegas, about 13 minutes away. More Bears calls coming up. Greeny's up at noon. Waddle and Sylvie this Friday afternoon, 2 to 6. Fleck and Abdallah from 6 to 7 tonight. And then Mike and I will have Odds Couple from 7 until 8. All right, Yurk, it's week 6. The Bears go to the Panthers. Line open about Bears 2.5-point dog. Money's coming on the Bears. They're down about 1.5. Maybe it goes out to a pick 'em or down to a pick 'em. By Sunday, we'll ask Furman when he joins us. But, Yurko, I ask you, my friend, what are Well, first, hold on. Let's play the open. We can't miss the open.
This is Yurko's Keys to the Game.
Trubisky stepping up, fires down the sideline. Robinson makes the catch.
Yurko gives us what to watch for in this week's Bears game.
And it's intercepted, and it's Eddie Jackson under pressure again. Can he get away? No, he can't. Of course it's Mac.
Yurko's Keys to the Game, only on ESPN 1000.
Of course it's Mac. Yes, I love that from Al Michaels. Yurko, I ask you, what are the keys to a Bears victory against the Panthers?
Carmen, I'm glad you asked. Key number one. This team has had the inability to control the ball really all year. They haven't been able to rush the ball because they can't rush the ball. They haven't been able to control the clock. I'm looking for this team to control the clock. Now, you can do it with a controlled passing game, a high percentage passing game. I think Nick Foles has the ability to do it. And then sprinkle the run in and hopefully get up ahead. And then you can try to run the ball a little bit more and establish the run. But I'd like to see them control the clock for 35-plus minutes. Key number two. Right. Now, on top of that, I don't mind the easy score. Who doesn't like the easy score? I know I did in college. Just never happened
easy
for
score.
Me. It just never happened for me. But
that.
I just know I always would have loved it in college. The easy score. When's the last time you remember the Bears scoring a 50-yard-plus touchdown?
50-yard-plus
touchdown.
I don't think they have one this year, do
they? Either way, if they've got one, it certainly doesn't stand out, does it?
50-plus-yard touchdown?
50-plus-yard touchdown.
I'll have to look at the drive shot.
Hey, every once in a while, I like to see a guy break a tackle and maybe take it all the way. Let's go all the way. So let's get a 50-yard touchdown.
It wasn't 50, but like I think Robinson had a 36 against the bad tackling by the Falcons.
Yes, definitely.
Oh,
not
yeah, that's right.
50 plus. All right. Key number three. Carm, you probably did this a lot when you were in college, and you know, I think we're going back a little bit to our thrilling yesterday year.
Oh yeah,
Those wonderful days of yesteryear.
Is this easy scoring again?
No, this is batted balls.
Yes, I did do
hands
a fair
on
amount of
balls,
that.
Guys. Yes. Batted balls, hands on balls.
I still do a fair amount of that.
Defensive line, let's get the hands in the air a little bit when the passing lanes. Let's get them into passing lanes. Ball goes up in the air. We saw Khalil Mack drop one, but that's what we're talking about. The easy interception, the one where you just see it up in the sky, and the guy settles underneath and he catches it and he goes the other direction. It's Carm, hands on balls.
Hands on balls.
Batted balls.
Yes.
Let's start him that. Key number four. This offensive line needs to come together. Okay? And I think it was the Beatles that sang Come Together.
Come together.
They need
right
to
now.
Come together because Alex Barrs is going to step in at the guard position. He's going to be a starter. They've had 10 days to work with each other to head in the right direction. This is the worst unit on the Bears team by far. I'm hoping they can find a way to propel themselves. At least the last 2 weeks, they've been terrible. They've been exposed. So I'm hoping this offensive line can come together. And those are the keys to a Bears victory against the Carolina Panthers in Charlotte this weekend.
Smoking hot, my friend. Yurk, I'm looking at the touchdown log because you asked a good question. So the long this year, Meller hit it on the head, 37 yards to Allen Robinson.
Yeah,
That's the long touchdown this year, okay?
That's what I was afraid of.
The long offensive touchdown last year, 36 yards. That was their long offensive touchdown last year. Their longest touchdown was a 102-yard Cordero Patterson kickoff return for a touchdown. Their second longest touchdown was a 37-yard Ha-Ha Clinton Dix interception return for a touchdown. Taylor Gabriel had their long offensive touchdown at 36. That's it. That's the offense last year. Now, going back to 2018, I think it was the game against the Jets. Yes, it was. Tariq Cohen's 70-yarder, remember?
Yeah.
He had that little screen pass that he took for 70.
Sure.
So the offense did have
to the house, Carmen.
The offense did have a 70-yard touchdown in 18. They also had a 45-yard touchdown pass to Anthony Miller. So there were some longer scoring plays that year, but they don't have a 40-yard touchdown, guys, in the last year and a half almost.
That's a problem.
Not an offensive touchdown.
Yeah, that's a problem.
They don't have a 40-yard offensive touchdown.
Yeah, you'd like to have some quick strike capabilities.
Not to say that you should have 10 of those, but I mean, my God.
No, but if you look at some of the top offensive teams.
You want me to look at Kansas City?
In the NFL.
You want to cry? You want me to go to Kansas City?
They have Tyreek Hill.
Well, okay.
I know, I'm just saying.
They got Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. Give me a team. I'll go check. Well,
who do you want me to look? New Orleans Saints. Time's going to look up the New Orleans Saints.
With Drew Brees' his diminishing arm strength, they probably still had a couple of 40-pluses on their
This year, ledger. They already have a 52-yard touchdown pass.
Did Taysom Hill throw that?
Or no, from Brees.
Oh, that was okay.
To so Kamara.
That was the running catch by
yes,
Kamara.
Yes, and Brees has a 41-yard touchdown pass to Jared Cook. So there's a couple of over 40 yards just this year. You want to go back
LA
to last
Rams.
Year?
LA Rams. Go to LA. Yeah, go last year. Hold then on, you go to LA Rams.
Here, last year, Drew Brees, 61 yards to Jared Cook.
That's Cook. End. It's not like he's a mismatch, but he's not like an elite
he's
game
not a
breaker.
Blazer. He's not a blazer.
Brees also threw a 45-yard touchdown pass to Taysom Hill last year at one point. Yeah, I mean, you could do this all day. You should be able to find a couple of 40-yard touchdowns
That's
for crying out loud.
That's right.
And like, to that point, though, Brees doesn't – it's clear. He doesn't have the arm strength, you know, to hit on these long bombs.
But it still happens.
But they still are easy touchdowns. You get that, and it makes it so much easier going forward.
Sure does. I promise you some more defensive numbers. Jurko, you said they're fourth in the NFL in points per game.
Right.
I compiled the list. This is the Bears' defensive ranks through 5 weeks, Jurko, okay? Like you said, fourth in points per game.
Yeah.
Fifth in DVOA, defensive DVOA. Ninth in yards per play. That's the worst of the group here. Second in opposing quarterback rating. First in opposing quarterback completion percentage. First in red zone percentage. Second in third down percentage. I mean, those are numbers that are good enough for you to say, yeah, you got a pretty dominant defense. Even though we've been critical, maybe overly critical, because I think as fans, look, the team relies on the defense a lot. As fans, it's like all we have to hang our hat on for the most part. And so when they're not perfect, we get down on the defense, or I think we have a tendency to do that. This ain't the defense's fault. The Bears' defense has allowed one fourth quarter touchdown this year. One. In five games. Since 2018, the Bears have held teams to fewer than 21 points, okay? So 20 or less than three touchdowns, 25 times. Now
What's
they are
the record?
20-5. They are you should be.
Yeah.
You should be almost perfect when you're holding teams to fewer than 21 points in this league.
Yeah.
That's an amazing feat.
7-3 loss.
Unfortunately, they lost one of those games that I counted there.
Yeah.
Was the playoff game against Philly where they held the opposition to fewer than 21 points and they lost.
Green Bay 7-3 loss.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go. The Indy game 19-11 loss.
Right.
Yeah.
Like 25 times they've held the opposition to fewer than three touchdowns.
This is what they're measured against. They scored six touchdowns. They scored six touchdowns in 2018. The Bears' defense.
Yeah, I know.
Six touchdowns they scored.
It's crazy.
So if the defense is not scoring, you're not as good as you once were.
It's unfair.
So you're not good enough.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you said it. You know, take a look at their actual numbers. And then what are you really measuring them against? You're measuring them against that 2018 team.
I mean,
and they want to know why are they not that, and then the answer is usually Vic Fangio.
Those are good numbers. You're top five in DVOA, quarterback rating, quarterback completion percentage, points per game, red zone percentage, and third down percentage. You're top five across the board in all those categories.
Their defense is the blame, Carm.
It's crazy. James is in Gurnee. What's up, James?
Hey, boys. Long time no talk.
I know.
How is everybody?
How are you, bud?
All right, James.
I'm good. You said it the best at the last key, baby. Let's really put it in perspective. We can go back and forth on the picks and Trubisky, but if you don't have a solid foundation in your home, what's going to happen? It's up front, boys. It's clear as the day. Look at Davis in Carolina. All of a sudden, he's an all-star. I mean, it is what it is. It's up front. I've watched enough. You know, I watch film.
I know.
It's the boys up front, man. That's where it's at. That's where we're going to have to get upgrade. Otherwise, we're just going to struggle. And Nagy's just Nagy. I mean, 3 years, boys. I mean, it's clear as the day's long. At 3 years is enough time to go. He's confused. There's no real stability. There's no go-to plays. There's no go-to formations. It's just frustrating.
The data sample builds. It gets more and more
at
frustrating.
At the end of the year,
thanks,
when
James.
Foles is his quarterback with a guy that understands his system, either he's going to prove it to us, even if Foles isn't the greatest quarterback in the world, either you'll know after this year or you're going to say, hey, he just doesn't have it.
Yeah. Oof. And James is right about Mike Davis. He's been great in relief for Christian McCaffrey. He's averaging 117 yards from scrimmage in the last three games. They'll face a tougher test in the Bears defense, and the Bears get the advantage of facing a run defense in Carolina that's not very good. Second worst, actually, in the NFL. So
now
maybe this is the week they get it going.
Led the league last year.
He did.
He led the league last year with what? 150 yards a game.
Wow, that's amazing.
And just over 2,400 all-purpose yards. Oof. And what I mean by that is rushing and receiving.
Right, yeah.
Not any special team.
No, just yards from scrimmage, yeah.
So that's it, yards from scrimmage.
That's amazing.
150. So at 117, you're still putting this guy here at close to 1,850 yards. 1,850 yards from scrimmage is a pretty damn great year.
Bears had to cut him last year. It's amazing. Well,
and the really interesting thing is with what McCaffrey did last year, the Panthers won all of five games.
Yeah, they've won three in a row without McCaffrey.
They
won three in a row without him at Davis. And Teddy's played very well. Look at Teddy. He's a smart quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater's 25-14 in this league as a starter, guys. As an underdog, the guy's money in the bank. He's 18-4 against the number as an underdog.
Not for a catastrophic injury.
I know.
In his first year in Minnesota.
Second year, I think, right?
First or second?
Third? That was his second.
Fifth year.
Or no, maybe, I'm trying to remember now. It might have been like a year and a half in, wasn't it? I mean, Teddy was their starter. I think he had established himself, and then he got hurt, and they had to move on from him. That's when they went and got Cousins. Because he played that first, like, year and a half in Minnesota. And then he got then he had the injury, and then he had to go on to New Orleans. We're going to talk to Todd Furman. Coming up next, we'll get some of his best bets for Week 6. We're coming right back.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Said they need a big play from the offense. He wants to see a 50-yarder. We were lamenting the fact that if you go back to the start of last season, and the Bears' offense has truly been one of the worst in football since the start of 2019, they don't have a single offensive touchdown of 40 yards or more, and we just started looking around the league a little, and you're going to find those plays for most teams. The Kansas City Chiefs have 15 of them since the start of last year. 15! The Bears don't have one. The Chiefs have 15 offensive touchdowns of 40 yards or more. I understand they've got Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. We do not.
But
there's one guy we could have had, though. There's one guy we could have had.
We've got one of his proteges there.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, right? Nagy's a protege?
He's a protege, all right. One guy we could have had. Why bother? Let's bring in our good buddy.
It's hard to go fishing without a fishing pole.
Yeah.
And you've got to have the weapons if you're going to do it.
Good luck using a spear. Yeah. That's tough.
Well, they do up for walleye up in Lac du Flambeau.
Let's bring in our buddy Todd Furman. He joins us now at the Corona Hotline on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app, live in Vegas at this time with us each and every Friday. He is at Todd Furman on Twitter. Make sure you follow him and check out the podcast, the Bet the Board podcast. You see him on CBS Sports all the time during the week talking sports gambling, and he joins us now. We're masochists. Why do we do it to ourselves, Todd? I don't know.
I'm wondering the same thing, Carm. I mean, if you guys are going to lament the Bears passing on Patrick Mahomes for the next 12 to 15 years of his career, it's not going to be a pleasant situation. It's one of those things you have to move on and hope the Bears find that franchise quarterback sometime over the next decade.
Fingers crossed, buddy. It's only taken six decades, so hopefully it's bound to happen here. Bears go to the Panthers. They're 4-1, kind of a flimsy 4-1. The line opened about 2.5. Money's coming on the Bears, though. Will this get all the way down to a pick 'em, or will they go off as an underdog at Carolina?
Well, it's always interesting because as soon as you see a move off the three in the NFL, the next stop you assume if money continues to flow in on the underdog is indeed that pick'em number. And you guys talked about it, lamenting some of the Bears' shortcomings offensively, where this is a team 26th in the league in yards per play, 16th in yards per carry, 27th in yards per pass. The list goes on and on. But ultimately, you look at the Carolina Panthers, and this is a team that's not going to provide a lot of defensive resistance. They lose Kawan Short as one of their key defensive tackles, and while they have been a little bit more formidable, the Bears with extra time to prepare, Matt Nagy calling out the team for a lackluster offensive performance, even in the win against Tampa. If David Montgomery can't get on track this game against the Panthers' run defense, whether it's as a receiver or as a guy running the football between the tackles, I think it's an even bigger red flag than we've seen. Originally, I thought I wanted to make a case for Carolina, but I ultimately think the Bears' ability to hold Carolina to field goals in the red zone will make the difference. I like the Bears to go on the road to Charlotte and send Carolina to a 500 record.
Green Bay, Tampa Bay, it's Green Bay minus one, basically a pick 'em.
You're looking at it. Yeah.
Who's going to win this game? And I think Green Bay's just a better team than Tampa Bay. Am I right or am I wrong?
I do think they're the better team, but I think you could get Tampa in a spot where they're going to be a little bit more desperate to try and make a statement, not only to the rest of the NFC, but to themselves. This will be the Packers' first visit to Tampa since 2014, and we know sometimes as you get into the middle of October for teams coming from cooler climates, it can get a little hot and sticky as you get into that second half. This will be a Tampa offense, Yerk, that I think will be a little bit healthier this week. Chris Godwin should be out there. It gives Tom Brady another weapon at his disposal. And when you look at the way they've been running the football, Ronald Jones back-to-back 100-yard games. Now, the big loss for Tampa, of course, is Vita Vea, who broke the ankle in the game against the Bears, so we're not sure how good that run defense will be. But I look at this Packers team, and for as good as Aaron Rodgers has been, I have some major questions about the defense. They've only generated 47 pressures through the first four games. That would put them on pace for about 188 for the full season. They were over 300 in that department last year. Last season, they were one of the top five defenses in terms of points allowed per red zone trip. This season, they're 30th in that department. Aaron Rodgers will get his, but I think Tom Brady will ultimately outscore him. Would have leaned over earlier in the week if we had this discussion, but the total's been bet up 5 points. I think Tampa holds serve at home, and they end up winning this football game as a short home underdog.
I agree with you, Todd, and I've made the case for Tampa most of the week. I moved off making it one of my best plays for one reason, and I'd be curious on like a professional's take on this. When you see the stat, and I do look at the trends a lot, I think it's important. When you see the stat that Aaron Rodgers is 8-2-1 against the spread out of the bye, I mean, he's a savage with that extra week. Should that ever deter you as you handicap the rest of the game?
I definitely think it should play a role, and Aaron Rodgers was pretty outspoken about not being able to leave Green Bay over the last couple of weeks because the NFL's COVID protocols. So if quarantine and hibernation, so to speak, during March and April were any indication where Rodgers said, I did a lot of introspection and self-scouting. If he did that these 2 weeks, he's going to be even more dynamic. And that's part of the reason for me. I was looking for a three with Tampa. I would have jumped in. It's more a lean for me than anything else. Yeah. I've burnt enough money betting against Aaron Rodgers that I think this is a game that I'd like to see a track meet in both these offenses on full display.
Todd Furman's our guest. He is at Todd Furman on Twitter, the Bet the Board podcast. So there's breaking news right now from Mike Reese and Adam Schefter that there has been, or actually maybe it originated with Field Yates, I'm not sure, but the Patriots will be canceling their Friday practice after a COVID-19 test per source. There is also a second test they are waiting to confirm is a positive. What could this potentially do? I mean, it's going to make it for a scheduling nightmare if they have to move this again. And is this the kind of game that might disappear off the board in Vegas here soon?
You're starting to see a couple of books take that precautionary approach and pulling the number right now. We did see this price get as high as 10 earlier in the week before Denver started to attract some money with Drew Locke getting the nod as a starting quarterback. The total has been on the move as well from 46.5 down as low as 44.5. But ultimately, we're going to see books to be a lot more precautionary than anything else. It wouldn't shock me by the time we finish up this segment, about 5 to 7 minutes, you see this number coming off everywhere while they wait to try and figure out what players may or may not be available. Simply incredible the world we live in now, and I think, unfortunately, it's the new normal as we've seen a rash of college football cancellations this weekend as well.
Yeah, we have the LSU-Florida game. We've also seen some college coaches have to be home on game day because of COVID. Mike Norvell comes to mind at Florida State. That looks like that's going to be the case for Alabama. I mean, is he the only coach, certainly in the college rank, maybe Belichick in the pro ranks? I mean, how coaches not being there, can they move the line? I can't imagine there are many, but has what's happened to Saban affected that line, Todd?
It did, and it's been pretty interesting to see where this number has kind of gone. Alabama got out to as much as a 6.5-point favorite earlier in the week. The news breaks that Nick Saban tests positive for COVID along with Alabama AD Greg Byrne, and this number reopened as low as 3.5 in some spots. That number is simply crazy when you think about it, because the only player anywhere on Alabama's roster that would move a number this much would be their starting quarterback, Mac Jones. And we're talking about NFL-caliber wide receivers in Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith, a guy who will be playing at the next level in Najee Harris. And if any of those guys had tested positive as kind of standalone cases, you wouldn't see a three-point move. But now the baton gets passed to Steve Sarkisian. Defensively, we know that Pete Golding was going to handle some of the responsibilities, or hand over, I should say, to Charlie Strong. And you're talking about an Alabama team that lives with Nick Saban, kind of keeping his fingers on the pulse. I do think, though, it creates a little bit of value, and that's part of the reason that you saw that 3.5-4 not last all that long, as professionals went, wait a second, it's still a head coach, he doesn't make us move our power numbers 3 points, and it's why the market is settled in that 4.5 range.
It's amazing. Is there a rule of thumb in games like this when you've got the best offense versus the best defense, and you know you see maybe that great defense getting over a field goal? Like, is there something that the pros will follow there, like trying to pick a side in that game?
Well, 10 years ago, I would have said you always take the better defense when they're installed as an underdog. In college football 2020, it's a very different dynamic. And as this number approached 7, I was probably going to be on Georgia there more as a value bet than anything else, because I do think that some of Alabama's defensive shortcomings that were on display against Ole Miss can't be remedied in just 1 week. But you look at Georgia, they've been prone to some slow starts, and you do worry about Stetson Bennett on a stage of this magnitude. And Georgia hasn't been that great running the football. Ultimately, I think this is a very tight number where both of these teams, if they play a close game, it's not going to overwhelm anybody in terms of their resume and qualifications for a college football playoff inclusion any more than I think it'll be a damning tribute or portrayal of one of these teams if they were to lose this game by 7 to 10 points. We can circle our calendars. I have a feeling these two teams are going to be meeting again in Atlanta in the middle of December to decide SEC supremacy.
All right, before we let you go, some best bets that you want to give out?
Yeah, we'll go to college, and we'll do something I don't do often, but I think this game has real boom or bust potential, and it's in the SEC where Mississippi State welcomes in Texas A&M. The best of the number is gone in the market where it was 6.5-7, so I'm going to take Mississippi State on the money line at a price just shy of 2-1. I think you're going to get the Bulldogs either putting a good foot forward in a winning effort. I don't see the number coming into play here, so I'll take the value there at plus $2 in that game. And when we look in the National Football League, I know it's an ugly duckling, but it's a game where you've seen a major change in perception on Sunday Night Football. And I'll take the 49ers and what I think will be one of their better efforts of the season. If they were to lose this game to a division rival, you can kind of write them off. For those folks who want to look at their upcoming schedule, you'll be blown away. I think with a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo, the defense will raise its level of play. And I'll take the 49ers plus 3, but definitely shop around. You may be able to find a 3.5, and that's actually where I personally bet it myself.
The intradivision home dog. All right, my man, it's always great talking to you. We'll catch up next week. Happy wagering.
Always a pleasure, Jensen. Yerk, I'm going to hang up now because I want to listen to your full breakdown of the Merseyside Derby tomorrow morning at 6:30 Central Time.
Oh, wait, Liverpool-Everton?
You know it, my friend. Big game for Liverpool bouncing back after that 7-2 drubbing against Aston Villa before the international break.
It was awful for him, and Everton still undefeated in the Premiership?
Sitting atop the table under Ancelotti's leadership, so it takes on an added dimension in a game where we haven't seen a whole lot of goals. Enjoy the weekend, gentlemen.
We will, Todd. See you, buddy.
It's the great James Rodriguez, the Colombian.
Who went to
Everton, yes.
Everton?
Yeah, he's in Everton now. He was with Real Madrid, loaned out to Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich back to Real. Real has now let him go, and he's signed with Everton.
With Everton. Wow, yeah. Top the table. Check out Todd's podcast, the Bet the Board podcast, at Todd Furman.
Looking for an early morning thrashing by the Reds, hopefully.
Yeah, because you're a Liverpool guy.
Yes, sir.
Meller loves
Let's
Liverpool.
Let's get back on the high horse here.
Mike North has his bonus play for us coming up next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, the story we're going to follow is if the Patriots are going to be delayed again, according to reports. Field Yates, Mike Reese, Adam Schefter working on the story at ESPN.com. Another positive COVID test, potentially 2, and it could, boy, it's really going to start to get hard now. I mean, they've already had to push that game, right? I mean the Broncos haven't played since October 1st, guys.
It's only hard in the sense that they've been trying to avoid having that week 18, which is basically inevitable.
I guess you're going to have it. Yeah, it's just that's what you're going to have to do.
I think they've avoided it knowing that they wanted it there as the buffer because they didn't want to commit to saying, okay, we need to move a game early in the season to week 18 when we still have the bye weeks to work with.
Yeah.
Now that they're running out of byes for some teams, they're just going to move it to week 18.
They might need that.
And they may even have a week 19.
They might. And who cares?
It is what it is.
If they're playing the Super Bowl on Valentine's Day, so be it. It's COVID. What the hell are you going to do? Let's bring in Mike North. He joins us for the bonus play with Carmen and Yurko. Mike and I have odds couple tonight after Black and Abdallah from 7 until 8, where we're going to go around week 6 and some great college games, including Georgia, Alabama. Mikey, what's up, bud?
I need as many weeks as we can get. What's up,
that's
fellas?
Right. We might need 19 weeks, Mike. Maybe 20.
Oh, I'm telling you, you know what? I see a lot of great handicappers right now struggling. You're still rolling around.
He is.
You're doing your job. You're doing
I'm
well.
I'm hovering.
Carb. Carm, you're 5-5, and I'm just a measly 9 games under .500, which will make. Somebody said to me at the airport the other day, I had to pick somebody up, and they said, have you ever done anything daring like climb Mount Everest? I go, no, but I'm 9-under .500 betting. They go, oh, my God, we're sorry to hear
that's
that.
That's Mount Everest. You know? You got to come back. That's
all right. Oh, I'm coming back, baby. I'll come back. And I got a game. Believe me, I don't pick these games. The system does. I believe in the system. It's done well for the last 4 years. But, hey, who knows what's going to happen now? I wouldn't blame you if you didn't want to fade me at this moment, being a little bit cold. But I saw a game. I don't pick these games out. Believe me when I tell you this. But Virginia Tech is playing Boston College. Mm-hmm. Now, Boston College is 3-1. They've had a pretty good year. They passed the football. Their quarterback's got 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Virginia Tech is 2-1. They both teams have lost to North Carolina, but yet Virginia Tech is laying 12 points to Boston College of Virginia Tech. Now, Virginia Tech sort of like been over the years my New York Jets. The Jets, I've picked them 3 times this year. They haven't covered the spread yet. Okay? So I'm. And I'm very tentative about taking this game, but it graded highest on my sheet. It's a night game on Saturday night. It's going to be Virginia Tech against the Boston College. Take Virginia Tech minus the 12, my friends. Just mark it in the W column.
Votech minus the 12. That's it. Top 20, top 5 team against the 3-1 Eagles. I like it. Votech is the play minus the 12 points. Sounds good, Mike, and I'll talk to you tonight, buddy.
Always sounds good before the game, baby.
That's right. It always does.
Yes, it does.
That's Mike North, at North the North on Twitter. Let's grab a couple more calls if we could squeeze them in before we're out of here. Greeny's coming up in a matter of minutes. This is Anthony in Florida. What's up, Anthony?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
I just have to say I'm chiming in on your discussion on if I've lost faith in Nagy or much for me. I blame Pace for most of this. And, you know, he does not have the offensive line. We don't have quite the personnel that we need. And to be very honest, I never really believed in Nagy. You know, from his last whatever play calling in Kansas City, I didn't like how that playoff game ended without him running the ball. It seemed just pretty obvious. And he had a good start to his tenure with the Bears. They went 12-4. But again, I wasn't really impressed offensively with that 12-4. I thought they could have been so much better. And we're always, I noticed we're always fighting in the games. That, when's the last time we had like a nice, comfortable win?
The Bucs game in 2018.
Yeah, there you go. The Bucs game. I mean, and that's why, you know, people want to talk about the defense. The defense is better when the offense is scoring, isn't it not? I mean, don't they get more chances to rush the passer when the other team has to throw?
Always. And I think that's what made 18 so great. They did have leads. That was the best their offense was. And I agree with Anthony. It wasn't great that year, but it's the best it was under Nagy, which is kind of sad. Hopefully, like Yerk said, now with all these weeks to go, as long as Nick Foles stays healthy, he's got his quarterback, maybe we'll see the offense that we were promised or something that'll tell us Matt Nagy knows what he's doing.
Right, we hope so. That's
we'll find out. Thanks to Mike North. Thanks to Todd Furman.
Sloppy track at Belmont.
Sloppy track at Belmont, the third race. The 7 horses to play for today. Thank you for listening and calling and contributing today. And a great job by our producers, Midway Jeff Meller and J.R. Strauss. Everybody enjoy the weekend. Greeny's next. Then it's Waddle and Sylvie. Then Bleck and Abdallah from 6 to 7. Mike and I have odds couple 7 to 8 tonight. Go Bears. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord has split you.
Stay tuned. We'll have more.
I think the cool people liked it.
I don't think that's whack. I think that's dope.
Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia! Mamma mia!